Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. One of the greatest pleasures of summer is having the time to dig into a good book. This hour, we're going to help you make your summer reading list with some of Iowa's leading independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Hello, Jan and Tim.
Hello, Charity.
And Kathy Magruder is here from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you all so much for being here. And I don't want to waste any time with chit-chat. I want to jump right in and let's start your recommendations. Let's start with fiction. And Jan, I'm going to let you go first today.
Well, I'm going to talk about a book that's just a real delight. And it's called The Most Fun We Ever Had. And it's by Claire Lombardo, who is a Writers Workshop graduate. It's coming out with Random House on the 25th of June. So it's not quite out yet. And it's just a family saga. The characters are David and Marilyn Sorensen, who meet in the 1970s and actually spend a little time in Iowa City, where he goes to medical school. And she's sort of a, hippie beauty. And they quickly have two daughters, the Irish twin, 9 months apart on Davenport Street in Iowa City, actually, I think they're born. But the novel is the 70s part is sort of in flashback because it's set in 2016. And at that point, their four daughters are like 39, 38, 32, and then the straggler is 22. And Wendy, the oldest one, is widowed. The love of her life has died, and while they were still trying to have a child, so she doesn't have a child. Violet, the second one, is a soccer mom on the north side of Chicago, married to an accountant, a financial person, and very happily married, actually. But she had had a child out of wedlock, never told, only Wendy, her sister, who her Irish twin knew, and gave the child up for adoption, and he finds her through DNA testing and shows up. And so it's just really lovely the way everything is dealt with, and the parents are still in love. They're still sort of physically in love, and the daughters are sort of like, we're always on the outside of that, which is kind of an interesting perspective. And the youngest the youngest one is living in Portland, Oregon, and lying to her parents. She did not get into medical school or into law school, and she told them that she did. And and it's so painful for her.
So it sounds funny and heartbreaking. Is that accurate?
Well, it's heartbreaking in moments because it's a resilient family. It's not, I would say, heartbreaking. It's a great
perfect
book.
Summer read.
It is. All right.
That's The Most Fun We Ever Had by Claire Lombardo, coming out in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And Tim, what's your first fiction pick?
My first pick is a book called The Altruists by Andrew Ridker, also a Writers Workshop graduate. His first novel, and he's a very young author, not yet 30, so I expect to hear great things from this author as time goes on. The Altruist follows a dysfunctional family in the Midwest. The father is a middling college professor who never got tenure. The mother has passed away 2 years ago from cancer, and the two adult children in their 20s, have become estranged from their father because he started an affair the day before his wife got the diagnosis and continued the affair all through her cancer treatments. Unbeknownst to him, his wife had some money stocked away, which she, because of her anger with him, gave to her children, quite a bit of money. And now he has asked the children, who have not spoken to him for 2 years because of this affair and the death of the mother, to come home for a family reunion, for a reconciliation. But he really wants to ask them for money to save the house, which he's going to lose the mortgage on. So it is extremely funny. And you love these people, even though they're not the best at communicating. They have a lot of baggage.
They have some unlovable characteristics.
Yeah, they do. But they try their best. And I must say, it is laugh out loud funny. And because it's set in the Midwest and it is set in the summer a little bit, it's a great summer read. When Andrew, the author, was at a reading at the store, I asked him how he constructed such funny sentences, and he goes, well, I have a history of improv and comedy, and the editors made me pull back.
Wow.
So just so you know.
So it could have been even funnier?
It could have been even funnier. But there are some tender, lovely, moving moments when they come to some understandings with each other, and I just can't recommend it highly enough. It's a very good read.
All right. That's The Altruists by Andrew Ridker. And Kathy, do you have a fiction pick for us?
Oh, I do. Mine's a little different, though. We're talking World War II Nazi hunters.
Right. We love diversity, so that's great.
This is The Huntress by Kate Quinn. She's the author of The Alice Network that came out last year. And in this book, in the wake of World War II, Ian Graham, who is a former reporter, hunts down Nazi criminals. He's on the trail of a cold-blooded murderess known as The Huntress, and he joins forces with a former Russian pilot, Nina Markova, who was part of the famous Night Witches Squadron, Bomber Squadron. And she is also hunting for the Huntress for her own personal reasons. Their paths cross with a young photographer from Boston who is mourning the loss of her father. And it's a great story that goes back into the backstory of all of the characters and then comes forward to after the war. And it's got a terrific twisty plot. The characters are so well drawn. They are so interesting, and their backgrounds are interesting, and it all rings very true. And if you were a fan of the Alice Network, there's actually a character who pops up at one point from the Alice Network.
All right. And so if the anniversary of D-Day has sparked your World War II interest, that might be the perfect summer read. The Huntress by Kate Quinn. Jan, we are back to you.
Well, I think I'm going to do Normal People by Sally Rooney. I don't know if, this book has gotten a huge amount of attention. She is a young Irish writer. She's only 28 years old, and this is her second book. Her first one is Conversations with Friends. And it's set in Ireland, and it's a young love story, and the two characters are Connell and Marianne is from a dysfunctional, wealthy family, and Connell is the child of a single mother who is actually the maid at Marianne's house. But she's sort of a outcast in school, in high school, and he's the opposite. He's a, popular sports star, smart, and they start having this relationship that's he doesn't feel comfortable telling his friends about because she's considered to be so weird. But they do really connect. I mean, they're very connected. And he ends up getting a scholarship to Trinity, and she obviously goes with, on her parents' money. And their roles kind of switch. She becomes the popular one, and he's struggling with class, and so that shifts, and they still sort of maintain this sort of secrecy, some sort of secrecy about their relationship, and so it's sort of, I don't know, it's a very hard book to describe because it really does capture in some ways. I mean, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, to some extent, many of us have experiences with first love where there is some kind of a class difference. And maybe not radical as the one in this, because the class systems are more fluid here than in Ireland. But I think it is something that almost anybody can relate to. Yeah. I mean, because you want to see everything in terms of romance and nothing in terms of, class.
Right. The obstacles that some people may say are in your way. Right.
And so when you're reading this, she never makes any blatant statements about class. It's just all sort of an undercurrent, and it's very well done.
Just feel the push and pull.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Normal People by Sally Rooney, and we're back to you, Tim.
The next novel I'd like to talk about is called Leading Men by Christopher Castellani. This novel, it's a little bit complicated. It takes place in two time periods, present day and then 1953. In 1953, we track Tennessee Williams and his lover, Frank Parlow. Am I saying his name right? Parlow, I believe. And they are in Italy. Streetcar has just been on Broadway. And it really tracks the relationship of Tennessee Williams and his partner. They go to a party at Truman Capote, who was there for the summer, and they meet this young Swedish girl. In the present day, she is now a reclusive, aging old movie actress. Think Liv Ullmann, who has, you know, made a career by being the star of an auteur director's films like Ingmar Bergman or something like that. And so we go between the summer when she first met Tennessee Williams and then present day. And we find out in the present day that she has a Tennessee Williams play that he gave her that's never been read or produced. It's really the nature of relationships. These people are heavily invested in each other. But the main themes of how are you the partner to somebody who's genius? What is your role in that relationship? Are you just the person who books the hotel rooms and packs the luggage and makes sure they get to their play dates on time? Or are you generally a muse for them? And do you have any kind of agency in your own right? So it is a beautiful story about a relationship and one of the most haunting final paragraphs you'll ever read in a novel. So it is. And since it's set in summer in Italy, hey, a good summer read. It reads a lot like an old movie. It has a very lyrical kind of slower quality to it, but incredibly well written. And if you're a Tennessee Williams fan, it's a must read.
All right. But that makes me think of F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda storied, tragic romances. All right, Leading Men by Christopher Castellani. And Kathy, I'm just going to have you tease us with the title of your next pick, and then I'll let you dig into it after the break. So in 30 seconds or less, what's your next pick?
My next pick is a book that's flying off the shelves in the store. It's The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek by Kim Michelle Richardson.
All right. And you want to give us a category if we wanted to pigeonhole it a little bit?
A historical fiction.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. We are going to take a short break. This is our Summer Books Show. We're getting recommendations from three of Iowa's leading independent booksellers. Kathy Magruder is here from Page Turner's Books in Indianola, Tim Budd and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and they have a lot more picks for you. And of course, we'll be publishing this whole list on our website by the end of the day today and sharing that through social media as well. But you can also write the names down as we go along, the old-fashioned way. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer book show today. We're talking about some of the best new books that you might want to dig into this summer with some of Iowa's independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. And Kathy, I very unfairly made you tease your next pick right before the break. So tell us more about The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek by Kim Michelle Richardson.
It's set in 1936 Kentucky, where life is not easy, the mines aren't doing well. Cussie Mary Carter works for the Packhorse Library Project. Her father's not really thrilled about this because this is really a dangerous job. This is bringing books out into the wilderness to people who have no access to them, and he'd really prefer she'd stay at home. She instead wants to go out and do this. This is her first job. She's finding it really exciting and interesting. Cussie is really interesting. She's born with a genetic condition that gives her blue skin. So when she goes out into the back hollers, people are a little suspicious of strangers, especially strangers who are blue. But she is not going to give this job up for anything. And as I said before, this is a book that just is flying off the shelves in my store. One look at the cover and everybody's sold.
All right. So it's going to be a summer read for many people this summer. The Bookwoman of Troublesome Creek. And Jan, that brings us back to you.
Well, I'm going to talk about the book that's flying off the shelves in Prairie Lights, which is In West Mills by Deshaun Charles Winslow. And it is also sort of an historical novel. I mean, it's set between 1941 and 1987, so that's not, I guess, thoroughly historical.
If you ask my kids, they say deep history.
and It's about this sort of flamboyant woman named Azalea, but she's called Not Center is her last name, and she's got this yellow dress, which is on the cover of the book and really plays a big part in the. It's sort of her going out floozy dress, but she's a school teacher. She's like a grade school teacher, but she's excellent at it, and her students love her, and she's very smart. But it's a small town, and in Kentucky, and there isn't and so she can't hide her carousing, and the townspeople sort of don't know what to do about it. Like that this school teacher is.
She's a great school teacher, but corrupting the youth.
And so this neighbor of hers, who's just sort of just the opposite of her, he's married, happily married, very sort of steadfast, tries to turn her around. the conversation is just great. The dialogue is wonderful.
All right, that sounds that yellow dress is eye catching. Is that part of why it's flying off the shelf too? You think it just looks like a perfect summer read? In West Mills by Deshaun Charles Winslow. And Tim, you're up next.
The next title is rather clunkily titled, I think, called "Break the Bodies, Haunt the Bones" by Micah Dean Hicks. Micah Dean Hicks was a short story writer. This is his first novel. And I have to say, please bear with me, listeners, it is the most original and amazing book, even though it probably is not going to sound that way when I describe it. This is set in a very small town in America. The only industry is the pork processing plant. The town used to be called something else, but nobody can remember it. So now they call it Swine Hill is the name of the town. And the town is completely haunted by ghosts. Some of these are very benign.
Pigs or of?
No, of people.
Okay, of people.
Ghosts that were from past generations that still hang around longing for the old good life. Ghosts that have ended, had their lives cut short or their dreams frustrated and are just stuck there. It is a supernatural comment on Trump's America. And it is the most original, interesting book I've ever read in a long time. Now, these ghosts the author doesn't use the word possession, but can haunt you. So the ghost can haunt your washing machine, your car, yourself. And the ghost will, of course, control part of your actions. And Janie, who is our heroine, she lives with her mother and her younger brother, who's in high school. Janie's graduated. You can't leave the town because the ghosts won't let you leave. Her brother is a talented and gifted kid, and her mother is possessed by a ghost who is so needy that whenever she touches you, she burns you. So there are horror elements to this, but really it is the political aspect of this book is what's so fascinating, because when another group of people come in and take over jobs at the only factory left in town, the town kind of erupts in quite some political ways. So there are some intense moments, I think, of horror. But the author would call it a fantasy. But it is an incredible original read.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly inventive.
Yeah, it is. I just have never read anything else like it.
Wow. So. All right. Well, Break the Bodies, Haunt the Bones by Micah Dean Hicks. Is this... Are you familiar with Hicks's work from other things?
Well, he's always fantasy writer, okay. Yeah, and supernatural writing, but his short stories, published in anthologies.
All right.
This is his first book. He was surprised that the critics were calling it a horror novel. He considers it fantasy, but ghosts make it horror to me.
All right. So, like I said, Break the Bodies, Haunt the Bones by Micah Dean Hicks. That brings us back to you, Kathy.
My next one is a great guy... Beach Read. It's Blood Standard by Laird Barron, and it's mystery thriller type. The main character, Isaiah Coleridge, always wanted to be a Homburg and trench coat PI, but somehow instead ended up becoming a mob enforcer. One day he finds his soul, and after some interesting excursions, he ends up taking a mandatory medical vacation to a small farm in upstate New York and becomes involved in the disappearance of a young woman from the farm. This is a truly unique combination of lyrical, violent, and meditative nonstop action, which sounds really weird, but Isaiah Coleridge is one of the most literate, philosophical hitmen you'll ever run across.
All right, maybe a Father's Day gift in the making right there. Mm-hmm. Blood Standard by Laird Barron. And Jan, that brings us back around to you.
I'm going to talk about Dakota Winters by Tom Barbash. And it is set in 1979 and 1980 in New York, which was very different then, actually. And it's called the Dakota Winters because the family are the Winters, and they live in the Dakota Hotel. And the son, Anton, who's sort of the narrator, has come back from the Peace Corps. He'd had malaria. And his father, who's was a talk show host, had a breakdown on TV and has, you know, is not working. I mean, he walked off the set and quit his job. And so he's befriended of the most famous resident of the Dakota. And so John and Oko are characters in the book and take a sailing trip with Anton at one point. That's sort of the crucial plot moment. But actually, the relationship between Anton and his father, Buddy, and his mother, who's a lovely character, a very supportive, literate, wise, funny woman that's getting her husband through this midlife crisis, is a big part of the book too. And her relationship with the son is lovely, but the son and the father is, you know, their relationship and the fact that Buddy has asked Anton to help him get back on and that he get back on track, and that Anton's having to watch his father in a fragile moment, and when he had always been very successful, is very poignantly told. And Buddy does get back on his feet through doing stand-up, which is a lot of fun. So yeah, it's a really good read.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly inventive too. All right, that's Dakota Winters by Tom Barbash. And Tim, back to you.
The next novel is called Foe, F-O-E as in enemy, Foe, by Ian Reid, and I hope I'm pronouncing his first name correctly. It's I-A-I-N. Is that, did you say Ian? Ian?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. he's a Canadian writer, and his first two books were nonfiction, which were critically acclaimed, and then he's gone into novel writing. His first novel was called I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and I would recommend that one as well. It is quite dark, but very good. Foe, this book, sort of reads like a Twilight Zone episode. We have Junior and Henrietta, who live on an isolated farm sometime in the near future. They have a pretty mundane existence. They've been married, 5 or 6 years. Suddenly, a man shows up from a company saying that Junior has been put on a short list of quote-unquote volunteers who the company is sending to a space station as sort of an experiment to see how humans can live in space and that sort of thing. He'll be gone for 2 years. But not to worry, the company will provide a replacement, so Henrietta is not there on her own. And I think I'll just leave it at that so that I don't spoil
too much of it. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong, right. But it is the trick with Mr. Reid's novels, with his first one and as well as with this one, there is a huge twist at the end. And it completely changes your perspective on what you have just read. So you almost, as soon as I finished it, I had to go back and start reading the book again because I thought, oh, I've been seeing this all wrong.
You had to go back and look through a different lens.
You do. And so what I love about his books is that you really get two readings out of them and, you know, they're not the same. So I would recommend both of his, but especially this latest one is very, you really have to wrap your mind around it and you're chewing on it for quite a bit of time after you finish.
Okay. Foe by Ian Reid. Look up Foe and then you can make your own call. Or maybe you know. All right, Kathy, your next fiction pick.
My next is a fantasy. It's just come out in paperback. It's Starless by Jacqueline Carey. The main character, Kai, has been raised his entire life to protect his soul's twin, the Princess Zaraya. But when he's 13, Kai discovers that the priests that have been raising him have lied to him his entire life, and he is not really a boy. He's a girl. Kai is still incredibly tough, great killer, you know, perfect for the job. And Kai is thrust into the dangerous politics of the royal court as he is trying to understand himself and also the evil that's threatening the world. This is nonstop action, intrigue, a little romance, and a little Lovecraft monsters thrown in. It's a world where the stars no longer shine in the sky, but the gods walk the earth, and it's up to Kai and Zariah to make the world right again.
All right, that's Starless by Jacqueline Carey. And we are going to make a slight shift here. So Jan and Kathy, I want each of you to give me one more fiction pick, and then Tim, I'll have you kick us off into the nonfiction part of the show. So Jan, your last fiction pick for the day.
Well, I'm going to end with one that's going to sound really sad, but it is an amazing book. I mean, I would say I have never read anything like this. And it's called Where Reasons End by Eun Lee. And it is a novel, but it's also, I read it like it were a memoir. I thought it was a memoir until I finished it and saw that it said novel, because she did lose a son to suicide. And so in this book, she is meeting him in a world that she's created, and they're having these conversations. And so it has to be a novel because she's created the character, although it is based on
Her experience.
And do I have time to just read a short passage? And so this will give you a sense of it. What I was doing was what I had always been doing, writing stories. In this one, the child Nikolai, which was not his real name, but a name he had given himself, and his mother dear meet in a world unspecified in time and space. It was not a world of gods or spirits, and it was not a world dreamed up by me. Even my dreams were mundane and landlocked in reality. It was a world made up by words, and words only. "Would you call it a tragedy?" he said. "I would only say it's sad," I said. "I have no other adjectives left. Adjectives are my guilty pleasure," he said. "I know you have to supply me some," I said. And it's that's how it is. She has these conversations with him, but sort of based on language, and but it's very also similar to conversations that a 16-year-old would have with his mother, very confrontational.
Yeah.
It's an amazing book. I mean,
and you can't compare it to anything.
Nothing.
It sounds new.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking, but also maybe therapeutic.
I think it's very transcendent, but sad. But nevertheless, I think really worth reading.
All right.
It's very lyrical.
Where Reasons End by Eun Lee. And Kathy, your final fiction book for us.
Okay, I'm going to leave you with something that is totally different. This is a lighthearted romance called The Kiss Quotient by Helen Duong. The main character, Stella Lane, works with numbers. She's got Asperger's syndrome. She really doesn't relate very well to people, just numbers, but her mother really wants grandchildren. So Stella figures she's missing out on something, and she hires an escort, Michael Fan, to teach her how to have a relationship. Things, of course, don't turn out quite the way Stella expected. What's really interesting about this novel is the author is also autistic, so Stella is a really authentic character, and her bewilderment at the behaviors of other people is really entertaining.
And feels real?
Oh, very.
All right, The Kiss Quotient by Helen Duong. And now we're going to shift to nonfiction. Tim, you want to lead us there?
The first nonfiction choice I have is written by Simon Garfield, and people may know his name because he's written several best-selling nonfiction books. This one is called In Miniature, How Small Things Illuminate the World. And Mr. Garfield has just explored the history of our fascination with all things sort of tiny. His criteria is that miniatures must represent something larger, and they can't just be little for their own sakes. And the most common one probably is a globe. But he starts with the Eiffel Tower, because when it was built and people could go to the top of it, it was the first time they could see their own world in miniature. And also at the Eiffel Tower, they sold miniature Eiffel Towers. So that's kind of where he starts, although miniatures go back to those small little portraits that in Tudor times and Elizabethan times when you could carry around your loved one's face. But he looks at architectural models, scene models for theater, people who are obsessed with, you know, toy train sets and dollhouses and just any kind of head scratching a little bit. Why are people so involved in this? I mean, there are gentlemen who have built, you know, model ships and boats and tanks and war things for 40 years. And they're like, well, who's going to take my collection now? You know, so he kind of follows this whole world of how we are so involved in all those things tiny and what they say about our obsessions and our desire to control our own world.
Sounds fascinating.
It is great.
All right. That's In Miniature, How Small Things Illuminate the World by Simon Garfield. We'll be back in just a moment with more nonfiction book picks. It is our summer book show. I've got Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder of Page Turner's Books in Indianola. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with six race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, our summer book show, we're talking about the books that should or could be on your summer reading list, some of the best new books. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Kathy Magruder is also here from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We'll publish this entire list on our website by the end of the day today, although we are tweeting some of the picks right now, so you can follow us at Iowa Public Radio if you've missed something. And we're talking about nonfiction books now. So Jan, I'm going to let you go next with your first nonfiction pick.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about another book that's not coming out until July 9th, so mark that down. It's called Three Women, and it's by Lisa Taddeo, and it's getting a huge amount of pre-publication press. They say it's going to be just a giant book. And she spent 8 years profiling these three women, like in-depth, like long New Yorker pieces, except longer. And it's about their sort of love lives, I guess. But two of them, she uses pseudonyms, Lena and Sloan. And Lena is someone who is having an affair that's, you know, that she's keeping secret from her husband and goes on the entire time that she's being profiled. And the other is Sloan is the other woman that's told in a pseudonym, and she's in an open marriage and has a very interesting background where she was very wealthy but wanted to work in restaurants. She dropped out of college and owns a restaurant with her husband, and I don't know. It's really hard to describe in some ways what this book is like. I read it obsessively. I was obsessed with it. I could not wait to get done with whatever I was doing so that I could come back to it. And the third person is a woman named Maggie Wilkins, and she uses her real name because she sued this. She had sort of a Monica Lewinsky-like affair with her high school teacher, which went on for years. And then his wife found out, and he totally cut it off when she was completely wrapped up in it. And she wasn't recovering from this experience. She dropped out of college. She was having a really hard time. And then he was named North Dakota Teacher of the Year. And so she went public, but he was not found guilty, even though, I mean, he was beloved, and they wouldn't. And so I'm really curious to see what's going to happen when it's published, because it's her real name.
Wow.
And so I can't believe that he won't at this point lose his job, because it's just an awful, I mean, you know, many, well, I mean, yeah.
So it sounds like this answered all the questions that you're not allowed to ask about people. Is that how it felt?
Yes, that is how it felt. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and it's very contemporary. Yeah. I mean, all these things would have taken place in the last, you know,
few years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Her Three Women by Lisa Taddeo, and it's going to make quite a splash, is Jan's prediction. All right. Tim, what's your next nonfiction?
My next nonfiction is a book called, a reference book, 100 Speeches That Changed the World by Colin Salter. And I think, if not last time, the time before, I talked about a book called 100 Books That Changed the World.
Yes.
This is the next one in that series, 100 Speeches That Changed the World. And the speeches start with Cicero and end with Oprah Winfrey. They're put in the book chronologically, so you can kind of follow. They're not all listed in their entirety. They've kind of taken excerpts just because of space-saving measures. But they almost all deal with either moments, either half of the speeches comment on history as it's changed, the other half comment on history, trying to make history happen. But if you're a history buff, or even if you're in rhetoric or English, you want to look at the power of this language. It's just so sad that there's not a CD with this, so you can maybe hear some of these speeches. But obviously some of them were not recorded. But we have Cicero, Lou Gehrig, FDR, Winston Churchill, a lot of war speeches. But even, people from trials, Oscar Wilde when he was on trial, Jesus Christ's Sermon on the Mount is in here. So it's just all these speeches that have really affected us. And we all know phrases from these, but it's nice to have the whole thing in entirety. They have photos, and then they have a page or two of historical context so you can see what incited the speech and maybe what happened after the speech was heard. So it's something you can just look through as you will. You know, it's a good book for the cabin.
Right. Or the coffee table, something you'll come back to again and again. It also, it just sounds like it would be a very useful book for students too.
Sure. You know, and I mean, if you're looking for a good quote to back up your paper or something like that, you know, here's the book for it.
All right. 100 Speeches That Changed the World by Colin Salter. And Kathy, that brings us back to you.
I've got a memoir for you by Lara Pryor Palmer. It's called Rough Magic, Riding the World's Loneliest Horse Race. The author is 19 years old in the beginning. She's just drifting. She's out of school. She has nothing to do. She's bored out of her mind. She goes on the internet and finds an advertisement for the Mongol Derby, which is supposed to be the world's longest, toughest horse race. It's a 500-mile horse race across Mongolia. On a whim, she decides to sign up and shows up for the horse race with a couple of pairs of breeches, her Winnie the Pooh journal, which she's filled full of poetry, and a bottle of pills. She doesn't know what the pills are because she threw everything she had into this bottle, so she can't actually use them because she doesn't know what they are. And she discovers that everybody else in the race has been training for at least a year for this race. She's only set off for a moment or two by this, and then she throws herself into the horse race with all the enthusiasm that someone who brings a copy of The Tempest to the world's toughest horse race. It's totally delightful. She is a wonderfully fun character, and the ending is totally unexpected.
All right, that sounds fascinating. Rough Magic, Riding the World's Loneliest Horse Race by Lara Pryor Palmer. And Jan, it's back to you.
Well, I'm going to do Save Me the Plums by Ruth Reichel. I don't know if you guys know who Ruth Reichel is. She has been a food writer for decades. She worked with Alice Waters in Berkeley and then went to New York City and was the New York Times food
critic.
Right,
and her memoir, Tender at the Bone, was a huge hit.
Right, huge, about her mother's,
15 years ago.
Her mother's insane cooking. Her mother's, and then she wrote another memoir called Comfort Me with Apples, which was about her. Yeah, and she's just a delightful writer. And in 1998, she was approached by Gourmet magazine to become their editor-in-chief, which was a huge leap. She had, you know, private planes flying her around. And so she's just sort of, but she's a very down-to-earth person. I mean, you know, someone raised by her mother would almost have to be. and so her son is still in high school while she's, you know, got this, you know, huge staff and running this huge magazine that has to come out, you know, once a month. And it's just great stories about what it's like to work in the food industry at that level. And then she always, I mean, in all of her books, she always spices it up with some really great recipes, which she makes sound super simple until you try it.
Right? Yeah. Oh, that sounds wonderful. All right. Save Me the Plums by Ruth Reichel. So, yeah, she was everywhere for a while with her books.
Right.
And so she had to have more experience so she could write another book.
Right. Well, they closed Gourmet. And she has written a novel in between her food writing books and this. But I love her memoirs.
All right.
Yeah.
Tim, back to you.
Well, on the cooking theme, I think I'll just dovetail with that. Jamie Oliver has a new cookbook called 5 Ingredients, Quick and Easy Food. And they're all these recipes in here only have 5 ingredients. I mean, you might have to add some salt or pepper or something like that. But for the most part, 5 ingredients. And I am not a cook, but I look at this and I am inspired because I can handle 5 ingredients. And in his intro, he says, I'm trying to encourage people to go back to cooking from scratch. So because there's only 5 ingredients, because these all are like 30 minutes or less, but he covers everything from appetizers to desserts. And I think, you know, with summer coming, when we have farmers markets available and some fresh food, maybe, and also I think if you've got somebody going off to college, you know, hey, here's something simple to start with, or even a young person in your home who wants to be interested in cooking, and here you go, there's 5 ingredients, how much of a mess can you make? So it inspires me to go out and try something, and I think other readers will find it not as intimidating as a lot of cookbooks can be.
I'm going to totally put you on the spot. Have you actually made anything in
the book?
I
have not. But I have earmarked things I want to make. So isn't that what all cookbooks
often
do?
Often have, as far as I get with a cookbook too. But that's great. 5 Ingredients, Quick and Easy Food by Jamie Oliver. And of course, we all know Jamie Oliver from the Food Network and many, many other things through the years. All right, Kathy, your turn.
Oh, my next book, I love this. It's The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick by Mallory O'Meara. Mallory O'Meara is a young producer from Hollywood, and her favorite movie of all time was The Creature from the Black Lagoon. And one day, playing around on some fan sites, she discovered that the creator of the creature from the movie was a woman. So she started researching the woman, Millicent Patrick, and discovered that she had the most interesting life. It is a story about Millicent Patrick. It's also a lot about Mallory O'Meara, and it's also a lot about misogyny in Hollywood. It is so funny in some points that you're just going to laugh out loud. You have to read the footnotes. Be sure to read the footnotes. At one point, Mallory is talking about the live oaks on the Hearst estate, and in the footnote she says, this is, of course, not to say that all other oaks are dead.
she had a lot of fun with that. Huh?
Oh, she is really interesting. She's really ferociously intelligent. The book is witty, revealing, touching. So funny, you will laugh out loud. I really can't remember the last time that I enjoyed the act of reading a book as much as I enjoyed this one.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement. And so I just looked it up. Creature from the Black Lagoon was out in 1954. So this is 1950s Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So she must have been the only woman doing what she was doing at that time, or one of the only women.
Well, she was certainly unique.
All right. Well, that sounds like a must read. And we're back to you. I guess I should repeat the name of the book. The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick by Mallory O'Meara. And we're back to you, Jan.
I'm gonna talk about a book called What My Mother and I Don't Talk About. And it's essays by 15 writers about secrets that they either kept from their mothers or their mothers kept from them. And they're very, very different. I loved the one by Leslie Jameson, who, I don't know, you know who Leslie Jameson is? She's another graduate of the workshop who's been super successful. She had a book out last year called The Recovering that was excerpted in New York Times Magazine and stuff. But she has this is a very, interesting story. Her mother has been married 3 times. Her father was her mother's second husband. But her mother had a first husband that she met in, you know, San Francisco during the summer of love, and they stayed married for like maybe 2 years. And then this first husband wrote a novel about her mother.
Oh, wow.
And Leslie, he didn't publish it. I mean, no one But Leslie read it and found out all this stuff about her mother. And then she decided, she got her mother to agree to being interviewed with this guy that she'd basically never heard of. I mean, you know, that she really didn't know much about at all until she somehow found out that he'd written this novel about her mother when she was 20. And it's just kind of amazing. They end up, you know, they end up spending like a week together, her mother and this first husband, and talking about all this parts of her mother's life that she didn't know about. And that's kind of what, that's kind of how all these essays unravel. I mean, there was another one about, you know, some of these writers I don't know. I mean, you know, there's, right. There is actually one by Brandon Taylor who lives in Iowa City, who just finished the writer's workshop. And his is really great too. He has a really complicated story.
I suspect all of these are complicated. as a daughter, I think, oh, I want to pick this up. And as a mother, I think, I don't think I ever want to look at this.
Oh, no, you won't feel that way about it. No.
All right. Well, it sounds fascinating. What My Mother and I Don't Talk About, edited by Michelle Philgate. Tim, do you have another pick for us?
The last book I'll choose is by Graham Robb. And Graham Robb also has written several nonfiction bestsellers that your listeners might recognize his name. His new book is called The Debatable Land, The Lost World Between Scotland and England. Graham Robb and his wife moved from Oxford, England, to a little tiny town in kind of right on the Scottish-English border in northwest England. And he just, as a historian, he just becomes curious about where he's moved and starts kind of digging into the history. They do a lot of biking. And what I like about this particular history book is that it's not linear. It's just how he finds things and he puts them in the book. So really you feel like you're a co-discoverer with him, a co-explorer, as he's traveling around this area. There's plenty of maps, there's lots of history in it, and you will be referring to the maps quite a bit. I found myself looking at them a lot. But it is a territory of land between that border that nobody lived on, but Scottish people and English people, before they were Scottish and English, used that land to graze their livestock. Nobody lived there. It was just a shared pasture. And he just kind of looks at how that land has been covered by robbers and reavers and Romans and all kinds of things. And it ends with Brexit, you know, and they're having the vote. And he's like, how does this little pocket of land exist? It's just kind of a fascinating armchair historian kind of read into, you know, who knows what happens in your backyard.
Oh, sometimes. Fascinating. The Debatable Land, The Lost World Between Scotland and England. And we have, 45 seconds left for your final pick, Kathy.
Okay, my next book is Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed by Lori Gottlieb. And it is the story of therapy. It is the story of this therapist's therapy. And it's also the exploration of the therapy that she's doing with three very different people. And it reads like a novel. You can't put it down, and you're going to learn so much about therapy when you read it.
All right. Well, great pick, Kathy. That's Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, A Therapist, Her Therapist, and Our Lives Revealed by Lori Gottlieb. We are out of time. Kathy Magruder, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And of course, we will put this entire list up on our website by the end of the day. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We've also been tweeting out some of the picks throughout the hour, so you can check out our Twitter feed at Iowa Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.